From the heart of Orlando, Florida, you are listening to the most electrifying show in media, A Neighbor's Choice. I'm your host, your neighbor, David Gronowski. So glad to be with you once again tonight, where we're solving the problems neighbor to neighbor. We're not going to rely on the negative groupthink media to define the narrative. We are the narrative together. In the beginning was the Word, and we are a part of that Word as we co-create a world that is more in the likeness of beauty and goodness and self-sacrifice. That's what our program's about, and so glad you could join us in participating in it. You can always find us on our Facebook live stream by searching for David Gronowski and joining that. You can watch the archives and exclusive videos with some of the top names in news and culture and innovation, and you can always find that archive on David Gronowski on YouTube. And we are happy to have you, as always, on our FM and AM transmission. Tonight is a special show because we have a great leader, someone who is right next to the Resolute desk in the Oval Office on the front lines of fighting for criminal justice reform, something that's very close and near and dear to the heart of this program, A Neighbor's Choice, because our program is all about the idea that if there's no victim, there should be no crime. No violence for nonviolent problems. We take that from the principle that Jesus established, that do not resist evil with violence. That's what he said on his famous sermon, which is the idea that if there's someone is not using violence, you can't resist evil. You can't resist that evil with the introduction of coercion. That's not the wheelhouse of a Christian, no matter whether you're joined by a mob of your friends or a mob of millions of voters doing it through hiring people to carry out bad laws on your behalf. We are about neighbor-to-neighbor solutions. So joining us tonight is Craig DeRoche. He's the Senior Vice President of Prison Fellowship, and he's a former Speaker of the House in Michigan. Thanks for coming on the program, Craig.
David, thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege to be with you.
Well, I've always heard great things about Prison Fellowship, and I know that was started by Chuck Colson, the great Chuck Colson, and you are leading the charge for a lot of the things going on. Now, you work with Justice Fellowship and Prison Fellowship, is that right?
Yes. What we did a couple of years back is we rolled Justice Fellowship into Prison Fellowship because we really always had one mission, and we were sister efforts. And we decided it would be better for all of our volunteers and the people that help all of our programs if we did our advocacy as Prison Fellowship in the future. And so that's what we've been doing since 2016 now.
Well, very good. So tell folks a little bit, just briefly, about what your main mission is with Prison Fellowship. What are you guys focused on right now?
Well, the mission is a simple sentence. It says to restore those affected by crime and incarceration. And so that means that the person that's harmed by the crime, the community, I love being on your show here, Neighbor's Choice, the neighborhood, you know, that is affected when a crime occurs, even if you're not directly the one impacted. And the person that's committed the harm, the person that's done the crime, we want to see them pay back their debt, learn from their experience, and be part of the solution on the other side, because that is what works. We all come up short. We should want people to successfully transform their life, and that creates a cycle of improving the neighborhood rather than one where somebody breaks the law and we continue to push them down and continue to kind of pick away at our own community and our own culture. So it's a cycle of justice that restores instead of a justice system that's broken and leads to too much failure today.
That's very good. You know, one of the things that we do on this program is we have prisoners for nonviolent offenses call into the program from time to time, live on air, and we reunite them with their family members to allow the public here in Orlando, Florida, and around the world online to interact and engage with the humanity behind bars that is so often forgotten. And a lot of these people that we meet are desperate to be with their family. Their children have been separated from their parents for sometimes almost their entire life, for vices, for crimes of addictions or selling things that can be addictive. And I don't find that to be something that has any place, that kind of punishment. has no place in a society where we have somewhat like 70% that claim to be Christian still.
Absolutely. And I'm a person that's in recovery myself. I went through the criminal justice system. My first offense, this is after I was Speaker of the House, was driving under the influence, and then I violated my probation. I went back out and drank again, and had to go through that. And so I not only do I have a heart and a passion for this, what I tell people is I'm one of those people. And, right. and to your point, it's funny when I talk to people, because they'll often say, what do you think about this or what do you think about that? Can I have a glass of wine in front of you at dinner? I say, you know what? I learned a lot about addiction and by having lived it for decades. And it turns out it wasn't the drug, it was me.
Yeah.
I usually get a chuckle out of it. I say, you'll never hear somebody that lost 300 pounds blame McDonald's. That's not what got them overweight. You know, it's people have to... they have problems on the inside, and they have to come up with healthy solutions by solving those problems in a different way, that the drug and alcohol was a solution, not their problem. And once they understand that, it's a different perspective for the person using the drug. They can see it, that incarcerating a person for using drugs and alcohol isn't going to provide them a healthy solution to dealing with the problems they had inside. There's other ways that you can hold people accountable that actually work.
And I wish this is the one principle that I wish could unite America, because I am so, it's very tiring to see politics become so needlessly complex and painful and divisive when we could all unify around a principle. I understand that it's hard for people to apply this principle for every case, but the principle that I espouse at the beginning of this program, which is there is no victim, there is no crime. That I understand that people get controversial when you get into applying every example of a nonviolent crime. But if we could use that as the rallying cry, because that at the end of the day is the foundation of common law, which is the basis of Western law, which is the basis of the way of doing business in the West, which is that, if you're going to produce a person on trial for a crime, there needs to be an injured party. There needs to be someone's property has been stolen or damaged or threatened to be damaged. If you're swinging a samurai sword in the middle of a crowd, that's a threat that needs to be dealt with defensive force. That's obviously an example of something that law should stop. But things like, fraud, trying to sell blind little old ladies beachfront property in the middle of Nebraska, that's a violent act. You're trying to steal their money through trickery. Things like assault and attempts thereof, harming children, those things are obviously should be met with society's defensive force, which we call law. But there's so many things that have no victim, drug use or, vices, all kinds of things that we can name that don't have a injured party on the report. And I think if we could come together around getting rid of those laws, it could be a place that could unite left and right.
Well, you're on to something there, particularly with the victims. And this has been an interesting perversion of our justice system over the last 40 years. That the justice system really exists between the person that commits the crime, the person that they harm, and the community's restoration. The government is not supposed to be a party to it. The government is supposed to be a mediator, between those parties. But what has really happened, just as healthcare was supposed to be between a patient and a doctor before employers and insurance companies got involved, is you have a third party involved here that perverts the system. And too often now, it's really, the majority of our crimes seem to be against the state.
Let's hold that thought. We're speaking with Craig DeRoche with Prison Fellowship. You're listening to A Neighbor's Choice. More criminal justice talk on the other side. Welcome back to A Neighbor's Choice Radio. We're speaking with Craig DeRoche. He's the Senior Vice President for Advocacy and Public Policy of Prison Fellowship, which was founded by Chuck Colson and has been at the heart of meeting prisoners in their darkest moments in the belly of the system. And they've also been on the front lines of championing criminal justice reform. And Craig is also former Speaker of the House of the Michigan Legislature, right?
Yes.
Well, very good. So you've had quite a career there in politics, it seems, and then you had a little run-in with the prison system itself, right? Now, how long were you involved with a sentence there? What was the time?
I did not do time on the inside. I spent a couple of nights in the drunk tanks, but mine were misdemeanors, but it really opened my eyes going through the system as somebody who my crime was related to my addiction of that fueling so much of the criminal justice system in America today, as well as having to go through the process of trying to defend myself in the second case and understanding how difficult that is in America today to actually, when the prosecutor is doing something that was not what I did, and to stand up against that prosecutor, how difficult that was in America. It really opened my eyes to a different system than I thought we had when I was in the legislature.
Right. And there's so many people just get brutalized when they try to exercise their constitutional rights and go to a trial. I know of people who are serving back-to-back life sentences for nonviolent drug-related offenses with no possibility of parole in federal prison, where they see murderers and heinous child attackers and so forth come and go, and they're still there. And it doesn't make any sense, you know. But it goes back to what we were talking about before the break, about your point that so many of the things that people are being thrown away into jail or prison have to do with crimes against the state, which are really, I don't see how there's much of a basis for those in a Christian worldview. If you are someone, whether you're religious or not, but you esteem to be like Jesus in some way, if you want to imitate him as a role model for how you treat your neighbor, I don't see a lot of place for crimes against the state being on the books. And I think, Craig, that this would be a way to unite left and right, because, you know, I'm looking at the issue of the shootings and so forth, and there's another example of you know, wanting to use the force of law to coercively stamp down and crush down on something. And so they say, let's ban a gun, like an AR-15. But as I wrote in a recent op-ed that's in Town Hall right now, if you ban that gun does not evaporate. There are 10 million AR-15s, allegedly, maybe more, in America. And if you pass a ban, I don't understand. I think some Americans believe that when you ban something from the government, it just vanishes. It just poof, poof. Everybody's guns just poof into air. That's not what happens. Those guns, some will turn them in and some will do this or that, but there will be millions still, or say 100,000. Doesn't matter. That's enough that will be circulated in a black market environment wherein gangs will get those guns into the hands of lone wolf people who intend to do nasty harm, right? So you haven't done anything to solve the problem of gun violence. You just feel good about yourself, but people aren't being helped by it, you know?
Well, we have a lot of work to do, and it goes back to what I was saying before the break about problems and solutions. And we have a saying that I like to repeat, that hurt people hurt people. And, you know, when you go into a prison, when you go into the system, you find that the people have acted out, whether it's nonviolent or violent, in a way because of what was churning inside of them. And as a culture, you're absolutely right. And I would draw your attention to, like, the opiate debate right now. And as a person in recovery now, I just got 9 years this summer, I would say we're missing the point entirely if we said the drug was what cause the problem, because the drug has always been available, and even if you outlaw it, as we've learned through other things, will be available. And so as a culture, I'm not saying that we want to legalize the drug. That's not my position or prison fellowships, but to think that that solves the problem is invalid. It has to be. All the data has shown that. So as a culture, we have to actually engage with the people that are choosing these things, whether it is something like using a drug or if it's a violent act where they're hurting somebody else. And if we are to improve our neighborhood, if we're to improve our culture, actually understand what's going on. And that's what it doesn't seem like we want to do in our culture. We want to do it through subtraction, of different things, rather than saying we have a problem in our culture of not addressing people for the human dignity that they have while they're going through these different crises in their life. Mm. And it's hurting us badly. It really is as a culture that we're not engaging in that. And as you point out, it leads to these other things where we lash out with the people we can catch, and we give them disproportionate sentences. Mm-hmm. And it's not actually doing anything to ameliorate or improve the neighborhood or the community or the culture. What it's doing is it's devaluing the life of that person, as you pointed out, someone who's in prison for a couple of life sentences for drugs. We've lost our sense of perspective to say what was the harm that person actually caused. Mm-hmm. Is what their sentence should be, and somebody who shoots somebody, that what their sentence should be proportionate to their crime. And I think we'd get a lot more rational system. Mm-hmm. If we actually went back to weighing things on the proper scale rather than just sensationalizing them.
Yeah, I mean, the biblical model of justice was restitution. So if you sell a drug to a consenting adult, I can, as a traditional conservative Christian, say, that's a sin. Do not do that. And if I was an elder of a church, I could say, hey, you're not allowed to take communion in my fellowship if you're going to sell drugs. That is not allowed. And let's talk about that, and let's get you a better job. But I don't have the right to use violence wherein I can throw you into a place with actual violent people where you have no recourse for self-defense. I have no right as a Christian to do that, right? I mean, in the Bible, it's clear that this backs me up 100%, because you have, there's no prisons in the Old Testament even. Everybody talks about the Old Testament is where all the vicious, violent justice is. But if you look in the Old Testament even, there were no prisons in the ancient Israel. All the prisons, the dungeons, were in the pagan societies that had no interest in following God. Pagan societies like Babylon, like Rome, like Egypt, that's where the dungeons were. And so that's where you go, a society that forsakes logos, which is the way of peace, the way of love, as Jesus proclaimed it, is going to create a dungeon-type environment for every kind of thing. Craig, did you know that you can get fined, and if you don't pay those fines, you can go to jail for selling tamales from your kitchen?
And this is one of the things that I like to speak out about is I think we've done a huge disservice to the profession in America of being a police officer or a prosecutor when we've moved them in many ways toward that job role of being the tax collector in the Bible, where their wages, their revenue, is based on what they collect. And that's a significant moral hazard that these people didn't sign up for. We don't make our teachers, or other people work on a commission, so to speak. And it's really hurt our justice system. Exactly what you're talking about, that the fines and fees must be collected irregardless of what the proportion of justice there is out there. And there's a lot of reform being talked about. Actually, there in Florida, some of the Florida First Step Act started to move away from that.
Let's hold driver's licenses
and other fines and fees so people could get back.
Let's hold that thought, Craig. Let's talk about that on the other side. You're listening to A Neighbor's Choice Radio. I'm David Gronowski with Craig DeRoche. We'll be right back. A Neighbor's Choice Radio is back. I'm your host, David Gronowski, and we are with Prison Fellowship tonight. Craig DeRoche, Senior Vice President, joins us. He's someone who's on the front lines in the White House, even working to pass criminal justice reform. And Craig, wanted to let you finish what you were saying before the break about what's going on in Florida. You know, we're here in the heart of Orlando, the top radio station here in Central Florida, News Radio WFLA, and we're also across the world too online. But what were you talking about in regards to what's happening in Florida?
Well, Florida has recognized, the legislature and the governor this year passed a significant piece of legislation called the Florida First Step Act, which is modeled after the federal First Step Act that President Trump signed, and all the people running against President Trump voted yes on. This was a rare bipartisan achievement in our country, where people came together not in a compromise like you'd see in a tax package, but in shared principles, in saying that our justice system has gone too far, and pulled it back and corrected it, what we do while people are incarcerated once they leave prison. And that's inspired states like Florida to this year say, hey, what can we do? And Florida called theirs the First Step Act as well. And part of why the federal government did that, David, is it didn't fix everything. It was just literally a modest first step toward improving it. And as it turned out in Florida, the bill was scaled back a little bit. It didn't go as far as a lot of people wanted, both Republican and Democrat. So the First Step Act is probably the right title there, too. It's just the beginning. But it did dial back some things like we were talking about, such as the just remarkable fines and fees, completely disproportionate to the crime in Florida, that was holding people back from getting a driver's license, getting back to work, you know, and being a productive part of the community. And it's made some significant changes, and we're optimistic we can do more in Florida.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too. And it's obviously the front lines for a lot of political interest and elections and so on. Florida will continue to be in that role. And it's got a diverse and active community of different amazing cities. So, you know, what I want people to come together on is the idea that liberty should bring us together. Liberty and restoring people towards their family again, letting them to be united with their family, is something we should all rally around. And I think that's why one of the few things in the recent years that has created almost a sacred aura of solidarity and unity was the First Step Act. You know, I can't think of anything else. And also the pardoning of people like Alice Marie Johnson. It was, you could tell the power of radical love had broke into the matrix for a moment, the matrix of hate and division, in which, you know, both sides are always calling the other responsible for every shooting, all these horrific things. But it's almost like all those mouths were hushed in reverence for the beauty of seeing Alice Marie Johnson run out of prison and hug her grandchildren who she hadn't seen her whole life. That is the power of loving people the way God told us to. And if we just have enough courage to practice that a little bit more boldly, I think we could try to heal the climate and the culture in this nation.
Amen, brother. And it's what I tell people is justice, it sure does cost a lot of money, but it costs a lot more than that, because we're talking about human lives. And as you point out, liberty, and we're talking about our values as Christians, our values as Americans, and you know, it shouldn't be that hard. Let me give you one example from Florida First Step Act. In Florida, the felony theft was like $249. Imagine that, $249, you're facing up to 5 years in prison. Wildly disproportionate sentence for anybody that values human life. Mm-hmm. You know, to say if your kid did something stupid and did that, the fine and fee isn't $500, you know what I mean, and having to do some community service, it could be 5 years of their life, is not justice, right? And so the legislature raised it to $750, $749, but Florida still has a ways to go, because even tough-on-crime states like Texas are already up to $2,500 for that. To say if you're going to put someone in prison for years, boy, that actually better be a real crime. It better be something they can't actually pay back with money and hard work in the community, because we're not the soft on crime people. We want folks to be held accountable, but we want it to be proportionate to what they did. And mm-hmm. and that's what Florida took a huge step in that direction, but still has some room to go, mm-hmm. you know, down there. But the voters in Orlando and throughout the state, whether they're seeing that from a conservative liberty standpoint, or they're from a left civil libertarian standpoint, like I said, it's a shared value, and it's brought people together for a change in our country. And God willing, it'll continue.
So you were involved. You were in the White House for the signing of the First Step Act, right? So tell us what that was like and what we can look forward to in the future.
Well, it was a huge privilege, and I can tell you and your listeners that this president, I had the privilege, I inherited this from Chuck Colson, who was Richard Nixon's political director. He worked in the White House, in the West Wing, to going to prison, to becoming a counselor to presidents, and I kind of inherited that along with our team, our leader, James Ackerman, the CEO, where President Barack Obama invited us in, every president since Jimmy Carter, and this president in particular has called prison fellowship in. He's been on fire for this issue, and he's really doing more than his predecessors in the last 40 or 50 years, because he has the boldness to actually speak loudly into it. He's not afraid to say things for what they are, or to pardon people like Alice Marie Johnson, as you point out. And that was quite a moment to be in the Oval Office, standing next to the Resolute desk with not only the President of the United States, but people running against the President of the United States for his job and others. And to see that agreement come across was just an amazing, amazing time, I think, for America. And if people wanted to know when the change of direction, I think, occurred in justice, where it happened in the late 60s with the start of the war on drugs, I really think that moment with President Trump might be the signal of both parties ramping up the war on drugs. Now both parties kind of going in different direction really kind of began last fall in Congress and in the White House, where they said, let's together go in a different direction. And it was a pretty amazing experience.
Yeah, and I think I remember he mentioned you guys by name at the signing ceremony for the First Step Act, and that was great. I know Catherine Toney, the first woman released under the First Step Act, has been on our program a couple times, and several of the other people in that room. So we're really, this program's kind of trying to be the nexus for this new conversation across the country about this need to keep pushing towards more and more reform. So what's next on the national level, the federal level, after the First Step? What are you guys working on now?
Well, the things, the logic, it goes like this. The system isn't producing the good results. So we're putting $80 billion into the system at the state and federal level of incarcerating people, which is the most expensive, least effective thing that you can do. Incarceration is really good for giving people a full ride, but removing them from the community. So there are people that need to be removed from the community. They're unrepentant. They're a threat and a risk. They have a debt to pay for vicious, violent things. There is a list there, but it's not the majority of the people that are incarcerated today. And increasingly, what we're seeing with the federal bills, right, with the First Step Act and at the state, is to take people and say, you have a debt to repay to America if it's federal, but incarcerating you might not be the best way to get that debt repaid for us or for you or for your future. So the president in Congress is really focusing right now on cleaning up the damage that has been done for the people we've incarcerated over the past decades, to make sure that those people that have repaid their debt, done what we've asked them to do, will be welcomed back into the community, be allowed to work and vote and rent apartments and become full taxpayers and citizens again. And you're going to see more activity focused in that area as we try to change the experience while people are incarcerated, kind of working backward so they're less likely to commit a crime instead of more likely to commit a crime.
PrisonFellowship.org. We'll be right back with Craig DeRoche, and you're listening to A Neighbor's Choice.
The whispers in the morning of lovers sleeping tight are rolling by like thunder now.
A Neighbor's Choice Radio returns. I'm your host, David Gronoski. We're speaking with a great organization at the front lines of trying to change the laws that have created brokenness and despair and misery for millions of people, and that is PrisonFellowship.org. Craig DeRoche is the senior vice president, and he was involved with the First Step Act, and he's involved with some of the state stuff like the Florida First Step Act. We're hoping that they can go stronger here in Florida. There's a lot of people are passionate about this issue, and it's going to be continually to be a no-brainer. So we're going to go to some of the comments from our listeners. Tim says, land of the free. Tracy says, great show. My son Lance Glore is serving a 10-year federal prison sentence for marijuana, even though the Washington state has it legal, medical marijuana. Our family is horribly suffering alongside our son, Lance. So, Craig, I mean, there are people in pain right now. They can't get sleep. Their children are in anguish. You know, we're talking about a land where people are having this divisive viciousness, and it's spilling out at the seams. And this has a major contribution to that, and we have to get a reckoning around it. What do you think?
I agree, and I wish that our politicians had either, and I'm a recovering politician too, so I can poke fun at myself because I could have obviously done more while I was there, but to really stiffen their spines on this, because injustice is injustice, and it doesn't matter if it's something that's happening on the street or if it's something that your government is doing. It's something that you should, if you hold elective office, it should get the hair on the back of your neck standing up, and you should get your blood pumping, and you should be ready to go to battle. I mean, the story you just told me of someone 10 years for marijuana in America today should make your listeners be extremely upset, and they should know that there's many, many thousands of other stories out there, and it is the value and the dignity of human life that we're talking about. And so not knowing anything about the specifics of that case, I can tell you I know specifics about a whole bunch of other cases like Alice Marie Johnson's, where people would, we all should be properly outraged, and we shouldn't say, I'll get around to it in a couple of years. We should be motivated to do it now. That's you know, the sense of urgency that I think has been lacking that we're moving toward as a culture. But I only hope that it accelerates because, as we've seen with all these bills, it's reported by supported by the Republicans and Democrats. So there's no excuse to take off a few months because there's an election coming up. You might look a lot better if you did it, you know, with the election right around the corner and went ahead and did it together, because people's lives are on the line, and they're sitting in prison for years waiting for the reform.
So people tend to demonize and monsterize these people based on the actual substances that they're being associated with. Like, people who are, selling or using opium-related products, they're supposed to be the worst of the worst, you know. But, you know, I mean, it's just not the case. I mean, we had Winston Churchill was a regular opium user, and he fought World War II against Hitler. Nobody talks about Winston Churchill as a monstrous person who couldn't function. So that doesn't mean the substance is good. It just means that not all these people battling with these substances are in such a crazed state of helplessness. A lot of them are suffering from pain, and they need a better place to get help, not with these underground markets that prohibition creates. But, you know, obviously it's the prohibition which is at the heart of the decay in so much of our cities and communities. Because if you were to criminalize something like cigarettes or criminalize caffeine. You know, I tell people all the time, if you want to have a thought experiment about how prohibition creates violence, criminalize caffeine. You know, a bottle of Red Bull would be $100 within a few weeks. You know, it'd be a profit margin that would be out the wazoo for gangs to enjoy. Because there's always, when you try to prohibit through force an object of desire, whether it's an AR-15 or caffeine or cigarettes or alcohol or marijuana or whatever, you're not going to curb the desire. You're going to, in fact, enhance it in some cases with the hot stove syndrome. That's what Paul talks about, that the law provokes us to sin. St. Paul said that the law provokes us. It triggers and hunger for more of the sin that's being bludgeoned through coercion. So that's not the way to deal with your neighbor. And we wouldn't want us to be treated that way. So we need to extend that same mercy and grace and not make it predicated on the substance. You know, well, I'll be nice to my alcoholic neighbor, but not my drug neighbor. No, because we all have vices. We all have addictions. And that needs to be no victim, no crime should be the mantra that we push forward on to get rid of some of these laws.
There was a great theologian of the late 20th and early 21st century on Sunday nights. He has a show. It's still going. His name's Homer Simpson. And Bart, his son, asked him why he was always hard on Flanders, the Christian neighbor, and he said, because it made him feel better about himself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what exactly the point you're making and what we do by trying to say, well, opium is worse than alcoholism or other things, as people are trying to put people on a scale, when in truth, these are serious issues that we want people to work through. And the criminal justice system has not shown through incarceration that it helps people get sober. It really has the most dismal results of all. Problem-solving courts, other forms of accountability can push people. I know that firsthand. Drug testing required me for 220 days, helped save my life. My younger brother died of an overdose a year and a half later. That accountability helped me, but being in jail would not have helped me learn in the real world how to live differently. And so how we punish people, exactly what you're saying, it is spiritual. Paul and others talk about it. How you hold them accountable should be toward a restorative end if we want our communities to improve and people's lives to get better.
So I want to ask you two questions. One is, you battled with addiction. So what's one myth about people battling addiction that you want to communicate or dispel for the public?
That drugs and alcohol are the problem. They're not. I've never met someone where that was their problem. Everyone I've met, many tens of thousands of people, it's their solution. And so if you understood that they needed to address their problems in a different way, give them a different solution so they don't need drugs or alcohol, you'd understand addiction better. That would be the biggest one I would let people know.
Now, you are also a politician, which is another rare place in society that has a lot of myth. So you are even the Speaker of the House of Michigan, right? So what is one myth that you wish you could dispel for the public about politicians?
Oh, it's hard for me to do that one, Dan. Let me see, which one isn't true of these myths? I think that the politicians actually want to solve, they want safer streets, they want less people addicted to using drugs, but I guess the myth would be that they're acting bravely. And I think most politicians operate out of fear. They are afraid that if they don't vote a certain way, that they'll be held responsible and lose their job. And that's unfortunate. And it's part of the reason why I hope all your listeners help organizations like Prison Fellowships and engage them so they can bravely do the right thing and change our system after it's failed us so badly in the last 50 years.
Well, it takes courage to really change things. So I appreciate your time and thank you for what you're doing in your life. And we want everyone to check out prisonfellowship.org, prisonfellowship.org. Thanks again, Craig.
Thank you.
Well, this is another edition of A Neighbor's Choice in the books, folks. You know what to do. You got to roll up your sleeves and get involved in your community. Turn off the negative TV, throw away the negative newspapers, and get to work serving your neighbor as you wish you were served if you were suffering. I'm David Gronowski. Email me, David@aneighborschoice.com. I'll see you tomorrow night.